Bhajan Rahasyam, class number 4, 2009. This is the continuing discussion of the verses from 7th chapter of Bhajan Rahasyam describing the activities of the Bhava Bhakta, Jatarati Sadaka, to level of Bhava, the higher rungs of Bhava, where he's able to appreciate to some extent the prema-filled leelas of the Lord and the prema-filled descriptions or the descriptions of the Lord's Braja Prema Leela, wherein this Mahabhava is described, the Mahabhava of the gopis, and he's described, which, because this indicates all about the intense love and separation, Virahabhav. We're hearing, Bhaktivinoda quotes several verses that have appeared to him in his meditation that most clearly illustrate this quality of Mahabhav, this Adirudha, this extreme madness in Mahabhav that the gopis feel, that they ascribe human characteristics, or they see flutes and trees and animals as being just like human beings and having a similar love and attachment to Krishna that they have. 2 through 6 is describing, he continually describes, is citing verses from Venu Gita. And from our level, we are, of course, ajata rati sadakas. We have not yet, rati or attachment to Krishna has not been born or appeared within us. But by hearing about these intensely, or these supremely advanced devotees of Braja Gopis, then some detachment comes. You can say, not a detachment really, but attachment for such high thinking and such high feelings. They mix in our mind and hearts and create a certain momentum and create a certain motion in that direction. It nourishes a tender creeper of devotion with some very necessary fertilizing element, because these are bhav-filled, prema-filled pastimes, and we can't help but be sprinkled or influenced by some drops of that prema just by exposing ourselves to the descriptions and hearing about it. That's why Bhaktivinoda is giving it for all. There's two classes of devotees that study Bhajan Rahasyam. The advanced devotee at the level of asakti and higher above and prema, like himself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is his bhajan, his manual. And for those devotees that are sadhakas, aspiring to come to that level, they also attain value by this book. And the value, as we advance by studying this book and chanting the holy name simultaneously, then we appreciate more and more of each of these chapters, and because we become qualified, as we advance more in bhakti, we become qualified to enter deeply into the relish, meanings, and teachings of each subsequent chapter of Bhajan Rahasyam as it rises up. This chapter 1, of course, is Shraddha, and that's Chaita Darpana Marjanam. It's analogous to that prayer, Chaita Darpana Marjanam, and it's talking about Pratak Leela, Nishant Leela. The first Pratamyam Sarana is Nishant Bhajan, which is Shraddha. So Nishant means the end of night. Nisha means night, Ant means end of. So this is 3:30 in the morning till 6 a.m. So this is analogous to the awakening of the soul. The soul is sleeping in a slumber of ignorance and darkness, and he wakes up, and he wakes up on to degree to which he develops his faith. The more we have faith in God, the more we wake up. So this first chapter 1 is about Shraddha, faith. Adoshara tata sarasanga bhajana kriya. So bhakti begins with faith. So until we come to the platform of faith in God, we're in the abyss of darkness. We're totally lost and wallowing in ignorance. Absence of faith in God means a life of ignorance, a life based on the body. So the waking up of Radha and Krishna in the kunjas, which is a transcendental leela, is analogous for our waking, coming out of ignorance, tamasi mam jyotirgama. So the verses of chapter 1 are all about that, about this development of faith and coming out of this ignorance. And gradually at this point, we're in chapter 7, we've come from ignorance and developed faith and sadhu sangha and bhajan kriya. We've gone from Shraddha, and now we're at the level of Bhav. Rather, the highest level of Bhav, this is the level of Prema. 7 and 8 are all about prema, which is the goal of life. So these are the highest reaches of prayojana that we're entering now, which is the goal of our practice. So what happens when we get to the goal? Well, we enter the threshold of prema, but the field that we cross first in this vast land of Krishna prema is the field of separation. I've entered the field. I've sailed across the ocean. The ocean is the ocean of anartha nivritti. And as I've approached the shore of the spiritual world, I've become very steady. There's no more waves on the ocean. There's no more tornadoes or whirlpools. My boat is steady as she goes. And now I'm in nishta. And now I'm getting closer. I can smell the air blowing from the spiritual land. Onshore winds, or offshore, I forget which. I think it's onshore. It's coming from the shore onto the ocean. I can smell the variegated fragrances coming from the land, from the shore, the cooking spices and the flowers, because the ocean doesn't have much fragrance except for seagull stool and dead fish and salt. Have you ever been in the middle of the ocean? It doesn't have much smell. Not too many rose flowers there. There's no fragrance of flowers and roses and honey and blooming trees and garlic and onions and spices and so many things. So the spiritual world is an abode of fragrance and sorab and beauty. So as one is crossing the ocean and approaching the spiritual world, then he begins to perceive the fragrance coming from the land of spirit, the land of Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. Krishna's body is so fragrant. We're hearing about Radharani's body. It said that Radharani's armpits, the aroma from the fragrance from the armpits of Radharani smells like a mixture of Ketaki flowers and sandalwood paste. And all the different parts of Krishna's body are like that, aguru and musk or kasturi and chandan and camphor, all these wonderful things. So when one is crossing this ocean and becoming steady and there's no more waves of anarthas and he's up the level of nishta, then he gets closer when he starts perceiving this fragrance of the spiritual land, the solid terra firma of the spiritual world that he's about to set down on. He smells the fragrance and it gives him a great thrill. That's ruchi. I guess a taste. Ruchi. And then he starts to see, oh, there's some land formation there. Oh, I see some forests. I see some lakes. I see a vast mountain there. Is that Govardhan Hill? I've read about it. I've heard about it. I worship it. That must be the Govardhan Hill of Goloka Vrindavan. So then he starts racing with it. His heart starts racing with attachment. And then his boat lands. And he leaves that ocean, the material world. Now he has his feet on the solid ground of Goloka. And beginning with attachment, now he's in Bhav. And he's walking across that land. But still there's some separation. He's landed on the shore, but the capital is very far from the shoreline. It's in the middle of the country, the capital. Usually the capital of a country is not right at the harbor. It's in a protected place, isn't it? Calcutta is a harbor. Bombay is a harbor. Madras is a harbor. Boats go there. Where's the capital? The middle. It's usually like this. Boston is a harbor, but Washington is somewhere else. Protected. So Goloka is protected. It's not just there. So now I attained Bhav and I'm in the land. And now I'm entering prema. I have prema. But I'm in Vrindavan, but I don't see the Lord. I'm hankering. I'm here. I'm in His homeland. I'm in His playland. This is Krishna's playland, but I don't see Him. I don't hear His flute even. I meditated so much on it. I read about it. I heard about it. And occasionally I would hear it when I would chant the Gham Gayatri, or at least I thought I did. But now I'm in the spiritual world. So this is the Viparlamba aspect, that I'm here. He's there, but we're still separated. We will surely meet, because if I'm in your house, in the basement, and you're also in the house, then we're bound to meet. There's only first floor, second floor, third floor. I'm in the house, the doors are locked. You're in the house, the doors are locked. It's only a matter of time when we bump into each other. So this is the Viparlamba. The first aspect of praying is Viparlamba, and that's what Yugayita Nameshina is all about. Lord Chaitanya is on Gambira, and the Lord is there. It's just a short distance away. Gambira, where the Lord's house, the dark, the deep secret place of the Lord, Radharani's bedroom in the Gambhira, is only a few meters from Rajendranandan's bedroom in the Mandir, Sri Mandir, Jagannath Mandir. It's called Sri Mandir. Mahaprabhu is thinking, oh, I must get out, I must get out, I must go see my Lord. This is Radhabhav. Krishna, 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 hey. This is the Vipralamba Stan, Vipralamba Kshetra. So this is the Kshetra that we're all in. We're all in the land, we're all existing in a land of separation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Saptamayam Sadhana, he says, you want to develop Vipralamba? You want to experience and nourish your prema and nourish your eagerness to go forward in bhakti? Then study these verses. Who are the most eager devotees of the Lord? Who experiences a separation from the Lord more than anyone? Who experiences hunger the most? One who hasn't eaten for the most days. You experience hunger because you haven't eaten for 10 hours. And if somebody hasn't eaten for 10 days, how much hunger he experiences? So the greater the hunger, the greater the time period separation from food, the greater the hunger. So the gopis, they're separated from Krishna, and they have the greatest love for Krishna. So when they're separated, they feel too much pain of separation. So they're speaking here, and Bhaktivinoda says, listen, you can develop this mood of separation by hearing from them. And they gave these verses, because what did he do? Well, where did these verses come from? These verses came from a desire. These verses came from the heart of Radharani, and they were given to Bhaktivinoda by Gauranga. Gaurgadatar gave these verses to Bhaktivinoda. Bhaktivinoda is worshipping Gaurgadatar and Radha Madhav. And he's praying, oh Gaurgadatar, how will the sadhakas develop their Vipralamba? How will they engage in Vipralamba Seva? Even our Srila Prabhupada is telling that we must learn this art of Vipralamba Seva. How will they do it? Well, you say, okay, develop Vipralamba Seva. What is that? So he's praying to Gaurgadatar, and Gaurgadatar is saying, Radharani is saying, this is my verse from Venu Gita. The first verse was spoken by Radharani. Yes, yes, Bhaktivinoda, you write this down. This is now. Listen, Bhaktivinoda. Oh, yeah, watch. Now, Venu Gita, chapter 21, verse 14. Then what other verse? Oh, yes, another verse. How many verses can percolate through his mind and arise in his mind? Unlimited. Because the giver of the verses is God. Why these five verses? Why these seven verses? Vipralamba Seva, Vipralamba Ba, Vipralamba Prem is a vast unlimited field. Vast unlimited level of pure devotion. So many verses from so many levels can be given. But these verses are given. This is so one verse, this is a verse, another verse that rose in the heart of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because he sat down, what did he do? He sat down to do bhajan, as he did every night. Got up at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. But at this particular time in 1902, which was 10 years or so before he left the world, he was thinking, I must write my magnum opus. I must write my final book, my final instructions to all my children. A father will call his children to his bedside and say, listen, I'm leaving soon. I want to give some very pertinent and important instructions for your welfare. I've lived a long life. I've had many experiences. I want to share with you the essential things that I've learned. And they may save you a lot of time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote 100 books. Sanskrit, Bengali, English. So many songs. So many hundreds of songs. And finally, he cooks that all down. Imagine if you knew 500 recipes and then the cook said, listen, I'm going to give you one recipe for one preparation which will include all my 500 preparations. And you say, how is that possible? It's inconceivable. No, it's a secret. It's a big secret I'm going to give you. Bhajan Rahasyam. So in this book he's giving, this is the condensation or the essence of his entire life's bhajan. Very powerful. We take it lightly, or we can't really understand it because it's a secret. He's not hiding it. It's an open secret. Guess what? This book is a secret, and this secret requires surrender. This secret requires service. This secret requires dedication. This secret requires belief. This secret requires acceptance and endeavor. And then the secret reveals itself, and it becomes manifest. Becomes Prakash. becomes realized. Not a secret anymore. Like someone might say, you know, I have a secret. And then the other person says, I'm going to try to figure it out. Okay, you can try. So then he analyzes you and everything and says, I think I know your secret. What is it? It's this. Ah. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Oh, this is that. Is this your secret? Yes. This is my secret. Oh, I found it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if we follow his teachings, we'll discover his secret. This is 10:21:15. Nadyastada tarupadhariya mukunda gitam vakta lakshita mano bhava bhagna vegha alinganasta gitam ormi buja murarer grinanti pada yugalam kamalopahara. Hearing the song of Krishna's Venu, the Yamuna, Manasi, Ganga, and other rivers have become deluded by lust. So the gopis are very interesting. This is the perception of one who's driven by the madness of divine love, Adiruddha Mahabhav. They become so mad. They see this river. This river is lusty. See this Manasi Ganga is full of lust. See this dry bamboo flute with the holes in it? This flute is very lusty. You see this lusty flute, watch out. They're deluded by lust. Their heart's desires for love have caused many whirlpools to surface and they stop flowing. Bringing lotuses as gifts with their arm-like waves, they embrace Madan Mohan and place his lotus feet on their breasts. The gopis are seeing it like that. Does this mean sanity or insanity? This just means transcendental love. Who are we to pass any judgment on them? Aha! Nari Krishna Gita Shravana Kariya Shoto Vega Firaila Mohita Haya Urami Chale Krishna Pada Alingana Kaila O Pada Jugale Padma Upahara Dila. Hearing the sweet sound of Krishna's Venu, the Braja Devis, who are attached to Krishna with profound love, Krishna Anuragani, become overwhelmed with prema. They are speaking among themselves about the Venu Nad, the effect of Krishna's flute. With metaphors, they describe how lifeless rivers exhibit transformations of love upon hearing the Madhur Venu. Although, factually speaking, it is not possible for rivers to experience any feeling. Yet the Braja Ramanis, the young lovers of these young lovely ladies, who are endowed with Adiruddha Mahabhav and being controlled by its astonishing nature, do not consider whether a being is sentient, which means alive, or insentient, which means no senses or not alive. They ascribe or project their own respective bhavas everywhere they look. Whatever mood and relationship an Uttam Adhikari has with his worshipful deity, Ishtadev, Sri Bhagavan, the same mood and relationship is seen by him to exist in all living entities. That's why the Mahabhagavat doesn't preach, because he thinks, I'm in Palyadasi Bhav, I'm absorbed in serving Radharani as her maidservant in my internally conceived spiritual body, and this is my general outlook or inlook, my outlook and inlook of life. And I see everyone, everyone else is also Palyadasi, everyone else is serving Radharani. So who to preach to? They're all the same. Can Lalita preach to Vishakha? Vishakha, you should serve Krishna. What are you talking about? I'm already doing that. You can't preach to Lalita, you can't preach to Vishakha. Says in Madhulila 8.273, Ramananda Sambhag. Mahabhagavata deki stavara jangama tahan 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 hayatanra shri krishna spuran stavara jangama deke na deke tara murti sarvatra hayanija ishtadeva sporti. While roaming in the charming Vrindavan forest, Nanda Nanda and Krishna arrives in the Yamuna bank or Manasi Ganga, and he hears the sweet murmuring of the water, sees the beautiful lotus flowers floating on the high waves, and hears the sounds of the cuckoo birds on the river banks. and is pleasantly caressed by a gentle, fragrant breeze blowing over the Manasi Ganga or the Jamuna. Overwhelmed with immense elation, Shyam plays a sweet melody on his murli. When the rivers hear that sweet melody, they stop flowing. And on the still waters of her breast, of the Yamuna, unlimited whirlpools appear. Gradually the water of the river rises to the height of Krishna's chest, and the repeated crashing of waves causes lotus flowers to break from their stems and present themselves at Krishna's lotus feet. Upon seeing these whirlpools in the rivers, the gopis are unable to conceal their own bhavs. Hey Sakhi, hearing our Pranakant's flute song, this river is afflicted by lust. It's become senseless. His face is radiant, fragrant, soft and sweet and attractive like a Kunda flower. Krishna's face. That is why Krishna is called Mukunda. With his soft, delicate lotus face, Krishna relishes the kissing and biting of lips and other transcendental mellows of union. When these mellows are relished, all kinds of obligations are cut due to an increase in transcendental calm. Krishna observes with an agitated heart the gopis' lotus navels, which look like whirlpools. So Krishna sees that the navel, the nabi, of the gopis in intimate settings to be like whirlpools. And then the gopis are seeing that the whirlpools, circular movements of waters in the Yamuna or Manasi Ganga, they're thinking these are the belly buttons of the rivers, and that they're also lost in ecstatic attachment with Krishna. This is a special, extraordinary type of madness. One Brajadevi says, when the rivers see Mukunda's sweet beauty and hear the ascending and descending waves of sound from his Venu, both of which enchant the whole universe, the hearts of these rivers become afflicted with lust. Now they have reversed their flow with great force. Instead of going downstream, they turn around and go the opposite way, upstream. Instead of going towards the ocean, they start flowing towards Krishna. And their waves start rising higher and higher. And their waves are like arms trying to reach up to touch the chest of Krishna, embrace him. Krishna has a name Murari. Generally, the name Murari means the killer of Kamsari, the killer of Kamsa. This Ari means like that, enemy of, destroyer of. So Murari means the Murari, the killer of the Mura demon. Some demon was there. More like a dragon type. Krishna killed him. Well, there's another meaning, because Mura, sometimes the commentators, they say Mura is another form of Mara. So Murari means Marari. Mara means, the word Mara means to kill. So the gopis are saying, Mara means lust, actually. So Murari, when the gopis are saying, oh Murari, please come, means, oh killer of lust, Mara. Of course, Mara means also, another meaning is lust, it says here. So they're saying, oh please come and punish Mara, or lust. If Krishna destroys Mara, he'll become famous as Murari, and we will recognize him as having the same qualities as Narayan. Otherwise, because Narayan's other name is Murari, because Narayan or Vishnu, whatever, he killed the Mura demon. So gopis are saying, we're calling him Murari, Sri Krishna Murari, like that song is there, about Sri Krishna Murari. But we won't actually consider him to be equal to Narayan, or actually Murari, unless he comes and kills this Mara, this demon of lust within our heart. So these are the kind of, we can read text 5 tomorrow. And this is some inconceivable emotions on the level of Mahabhav, which is the highest level of prema, snehaman pranaya. And we're somewhere down there in the way, way below the, you know, the waves of kam krodh lobh, moha matsarya. But we have 2 feet solidly placed in the material world, very solid. But at least our eyes should not be looking down. Our feet are stuck in the muck, and the quicksand of anarthanivriti. Our feet are stuck in the quicksand or quick mud of anarthanivriti, but we should not let our eyes get stuck there also. We should never look down, always look up. So we should look up to the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya, he taught us that posture. Have you ever seen a picture of Lord Chaitanya looking down at his feet? His head is always tilted back, his arms are raised. Of course, his whole body is in the transcendental realm. But our 2 feet may be stuck in anarthanivriti, but our eyes should be on the Prem Dham, Vrindavan. Our eyes should be looking upward. Hands raised. Why you people raise your hands when you dance on the street? Because we're pointing out the direction where we're going. Because you ask someone here, oh, do you know where Leningrad is? And he'll go like this. He'll say, you go there. See, take this left turn there and go there. His hand will move in this plane, horizontal plane. He'll not say, well, Leningrad is up there. Petersburg is up there. He was down there. I'll say, oh, there you go. See that yellow building? You turn left there. He'll go like this. But where, you guys are always like this. And this founder Acharya, he was always like his head like this back. And he's looking somewhere up. Yeah, because he's trying to say this, we're going to go there. Prabhupada was never looking on the horizontal plane. He was always looking in the fourth dimension. He's always looking in the level of, on the plane of consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So everyone said, what is your Guru Maharaj? Is something extraordinary. I mean, his head is even like, you know, welded on his neck in a different way. And everybody's head basically goes like straight or like straight. And as you get older, it goes, you know, down because straight because you have a little bit idea about going forward at least. But not going up, at least going. When you're born, your head kind of goes level and you're looking straight and you want to go forward, make progress. Then as you get old, your spine bends and your head starts going down. You realize I'm not making any progress, and you just start looking down, down, down. Your life starts going down, down, down. Your vision goes down, down, down. Your progress goes down, down, down. Then you bow down to death and die and start over again. It's not that when you start out, you're like... But Prabhupada, from the time he was 5 until he left this world, he was always like looking above the skyscrapers. His head was always looking over the rooftop of the skyscrapers. Because he was always he's a Vaikuntha man, so he's always looking towards his home. So I came, why are you looking up there? Well, I'm looking at my house. So Prabhupada was always looking towards my land, his land, pointing in that direction. Therefore, hearing these high topics, the topics of Adiruddha Mahabhava, Prayojana Tattva, this is to keep our head uplifted. It's called upliftment. Self-realization, the word is called upliftment. So our head, our feet, it may be hard to lift our feet because we're really cemented, we're firmly rooted and cemented in the material world. It's easier to lift your head than it is to lift your feet, isn't it? Think about it. Head only doesn't weigh so much. Just go like that. When you lift your, like, oh. So we should always keep our head pointed upwards. Back home, back to Godhead.